on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. A planned meeting between the Israeli and Palestinian prime ministers has now apparently been postponed for yet a second time. Palestinian cabinet minister Yasser Abed Rabo says discussions between Ariel Sharon and Mahmoud Abbas will now not start until Saturday. Rabo blamed the postponement solely on the Israelis.
We didn't ask for postponing the meeting. The Israelis had asked for that. We don't know the reason. But it looks that they want to postpone everything until the summit meeting. They don't want to proceed with the implementation of the roadmap.
Both sides were scheduled to begin meeting tonight to discuss a U.S.-backed blueprint for stopping the violence and creating an independent Palestinian state. The civilian chief in charge of reconstruction efforts in Iraq apparently doesn't like to be questioned on how he's doing his job. During an appearance earlier on Good Morning America today, reports of ongoing post-war problems in Iraq got Paul Bremer a little worked up.
Now, I don't know who these geniuses are who think we could have done this better. I'm sorry they're not here helping us, frankly. If they want to come over, I'll invite them. Anybody who's watching who would like to come work 18 or 20 hours a day, who thinks they can fix this faster than we can, come on over.
Meanwhile, another U.S. soldier has been killed today in a post-war attack in Iraq. U.S. officials say he was shot while traveling along a main supply route. At least four other U.S. servicemen were killed in clashes in Iraq this week. And the unsettled atmosphere in Iraq is still generating fear among its residents. Things are especially bad in the city of Basra, and residents there are hoping visiting British Prime Minister Tony Blair will see. Even though Saddam Hussein is gone, the city is now in many ways worse off than it was when he was in power. Blair is the first Western leader to visit Iraq since the war there began. Few Basra residents, though, were able to catch a glimpse of him, and most dismissed his visit simply as an empty gesture. Blair flew into Basra to address British forces still in control of the southern Iraqi city, as well as to take stock of the humanitarian and reconstruction efforts throughout the country.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Medicare will take center stage in Congress when lawmakers return to work next week. They'll once again be working on adding a prescription drug benefit to the program, something they've been working on for several years now. Key House and Senate committees are aiming for a July vote. First-time jobless claims were down last week. Seasonally adjusted initial unemployment claims show a decrease of 9,000 to 424,000 for the week ending May 24th. The four-week moving average of initial claims was at 427,000. That figure down 7,000 from the previous week's revised average of about 434,000.
What happened to those sandpaper feet? They're so soft now. Went to the podiatrist, huh?
No, I used Carousel. I got it at the store in the foot care section.
Carousel?
Yeah, K-E-R-A-S-A-L.
Carousel, used and dispensed by podiatrists for years, gently exfoliates and moisturizes dry, rough, scaly feet in just days. Preferred by 9 out of 10 over the products they usually use.
Maybe I should use Carousel, too.
You know, I was going to say something.
Hey, Carousel. It's everything your feet need.
Iran is denying U.S. allegations now. It's pursuing weapons of mass destruction. Instead, the capital, Tehran, says Israel's nuclear arsenal is now the main threat to peace in the Middle East. The comments come during an Islamic conference of 57 nations in Iran's capital. Correspondent Roxana Saberi reports from Tehran.
Iran's foreign minister says any concern about noncompliance with weapons of mass destruction should be dealt with through international cooperation. Kamal Harazi was apparently responding to U.S. claims that Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons. Tehran insists its nuclear programs are purely peaceful and compliant with international agreements. Iran's foreign minister, Kamal Harazi.
Resort to force or directing unverified accusations against the states outside international frameworks will only undermine the current international agreements.
Meanwhile, Mr. Harazi is calling calling on the international community to pressure Israel to sign up to arms control agreements. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Yesterday, in Brakes 101, master cylinders, calipers, and pads were demystified. You learned they are a lot like hearts, muscles, and skin, all designed to stop cars and save lives. When I come back, it's Brakes 102.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is, Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
Welcome to Brakes 102 at Car Clinic College. Today's lesson, analog braking systems, or ABS. Ever press the brake and nothing? You just pumped and hoped for the best? Hope no more. The best is here. Computer-controlled ABS. This system monitors the speed of individual wheels and applies precise braking power to each. And if any brake starts to lock or slows at a different rate than the others, that specific brake is automatically pumped or pulsed to prevent lockup. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program today, broadcasting from coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, and across the web from IEAmericaRadio.com and RadioPower.org. This is the Tom Hartman program. We're speaking for the radical middle. The words right and left have been so abused by the neoconservatives that they no longer have any meaning. But the average person in America still does know what they want and what's best for America. I'm calling for a return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy that this country was founded on, where corporations had to answer to we the people and couldn't buy off politicians, where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working in middle management people getting less, where there was a social contract that people's basic needs would be taken care of because that's what we do in a community, in a nation that was founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed, as much as they would want you to think it's the latter, where people could work to get ahead, but at the same time, we don't leave people starving in the streets. We have so much to cover today. We've got a conservative alert in our second hour. We've got some interesting news. Hypocrite of the day. We'll get to that. I want to start, though, well, our quote for the day, Abraham Lincoln, we the people are the rightful masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow men who pervert the Constitution. And our kind of fallback quote for the day, or anti-quote for the day, is from George W. Bush, March 24th, 2001. He said, "You can fool some of the people all of the time, and those are the ones you have to concentrate on." And he's sticking to it, I can tell you. Our Bill of Rights for the 21st Century, which is on our website at tomhartman.com, and you click on the link to the radio show. One of our suggestions is that we own our government and our commons. Drowning government in a bathtub, as the neocons recommend, may have been a good idea in the Soviet Union, but the United States is a constitutional, representative, democratic republic where our government is literally us. It was designed to work for us, be owned by us, exist solely by virtue of our ongoing approval, and must answer to us. Government functions must be transparent, and that transparency must also apply to corporations hired by government, particularly any who handle our votes. The shared commons of our nation
including our air, water, transportation routes, airwaves, cable networks, communication systems, military, police, prisons, fire services, healthcare infrastructure, courts, and schools, which we're going to talk about in just a minute, must be held either by locally controlled nonprofit corporations or by government responsive to its citizens. Because our federal legislators represent us, any benefits, rights, and privileges they have voted for themselves must apply to all of us. Consider that one. Why not? Similarly, just as we must balance our budgets every year, except when in a crisis, so must our governments. Finally, government must not be a stepping stone to private profiteering. We must reinstitute laws against revolving doors, particularly with regulatory agencies and the military, and those they regulate or who provide military supplies. Does our modern education system serve democracy? There is so much in the news today. I almost don't know where to start, but this is really an important one, and I really wanted to focus this hour on this. Does our modern education system serve democracy, particularly given the direction that it's being driven by this current administration? With the No Child Left Behind Act, so eloquently named and so egregiously implemented. In the New York Times yesterday, there was an article, most people probably didn't notice it, a rather obscure article in the back of the paper. "The Changes Unwelcome, A Model Teacher Moves On," is the title, by Michael Weinrup. And it starts out in Orlando, Florida, with Mrs. McLeish, this extraordinary kindergarten teacher who's been teaching for 20-some-odd years now, 29 years, as I recall. And she has decided to hang it up. She's 53 years old and certainly has many years of teaching left in her, should she decide to, but she says no, she's going to back off. And why? This is one of the best teachers in the state of Florida. She says, and I quote, "A single high-stakes test score is now measuring Florida's children, leaving little time to devote to their character, their potential, their talents, or their depth of knowledge. Kindergarten teachers throughout the state have replaced valued learning centers, home center, art center, blocks, dramatic play, with paper and pencil tasks, ditto, coloring sheets, scripted lessons, and workbook pages." End of quote. She says that the breaking point for her was an article that she read in the paper praising a kindergarten teacher who, in the spirit of the No Child Left Behind Act, had disposed of her play centers and was instead with her five-year-olds doing reading drills to help her push the school to a higher grade on the annual school report card. Now, this is not to say that this woman is against teaching kids to read. She's one of the most successful teachers in the state at doing just that. But she does it in a method other than rote memorization. She gets the kids involved. She gets them interested. She gets them excited. She gets them enthusiastic. They don't even realize they're learning. Kids are learning machines. We all are. You catch somebody's interest, you catch their enthusiasm, you can't stop them from learning. You got something good. You don't have to force it on people, as Dick Gregory once said to me. He said, they will steal it. That's what happens. You provide people with good knowledge, they will take it. They'll say, that's something I want to learn. I want to know about that. But our schools are changing rapidly, and there are some really interesting theories out there about why this is. And I'm going to share with you in this next hour three levels of, well, it's Thursday, maybe conspiracy theories, but I think that all three of them have some merit about why the neoconservatives and conservatives are so bent on bringing our school systems to their knees. And I think it goes beyond just their hatred for anything unionized. Mrs. McLeish says she's never seen so much state and federal intrusion into a classroom. and can watch the testing moving her way. Quote, the wolf is at the door, she said. I must get out before it gets me. End quote. What do we do when we have a situation where our best teachers are running? John in Springfield, Missouri would like to talk about education. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, John, and thank you for calling 1-800-TALK-YES.
Well, good morning, Tom, and I was just listening to you on the Internet, and I'm a college type. I only teach graduate students,
mm-hmm.
and so I only see the top end rather than the bottom end that you've been talking about of students. But I tell mm-hmm. you something that has been, and I am in science also, and one of the things that we've noticed over the years is the failure of early grade school, and I talk about early grade school saying 1 through 8, to mm-hmm. teach critical thinking. And
yes.
that is the most important thing that education could. You can give tests out your wazoo, and unless you've taught students how to critically think, you failed. And
you're spot on, John.
And
you want to define critical thinking for our listeners?
Well, as a matter of fact, it has a political aspect. And when we listen to stuff on television from government or from the president or Congress or whoever, do we really stop and critically think about what they are saying?
Yes.
And the answer is no.
Right.
And that's
the intent, by the way, in my opinion.
Absolutely, that's the intent. They don't want us to critically think about it. And we have been trained, the younger kids have been trained not to critically think.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. John, thank you very much for sharing your observations with us. I appreciate your calling, and thanks for dropping by our radio home here. What brought this about? Well, it's interesting. If you look at the history of modern education, I want to just give you a little bit of background here, and then we'll get into this No Child Left Behind Act and what its motivations are. But let's look at it in a larger picture. In 1819, before there was any public education in the United States, all education was being done locally. You know, folks, communities would get together. They'd hire a school marm. There were no teacher colleges. So they'd hire somebody who was intelligent and educated, very often simply a high school graduate, to come in and teach the kids. And there were some really great textbooks for teaching kids. I remember some years ago, my father shared with me one of the reading texts from the 19th century, and I was just astounded. This was a textbook for, as I recall, fourth or fifth graders, and it was something that would make modern day high school students cross their eyes. It was tough stuff, good content. Why did the schools work then and they don't now? Well, we'll get to that in a minute, but where did all this start? Well, in 1819, Napoleon, well, just to back up even a little farther, before 1819, the primary export of the country of Prussia, which is now a state in Germany, but at that time was an independent nation, the primary export of Prussia was weapons and soldiers of fortune, mostly soldiers. In fact, it was Prussian and Hessian soldiers that we hired with money we borrowed from the French to fight the Revolutionary War against the British that many scholars say turned the tide, made the difference. Without those mercenaries, we may not have succeeded in overthrowing the British in 1776. And the Prussians didn't just ship their soldiers off to the United States. They shipped them all over the world. This was the major export of this country. And so in 1819, or maybe it was 1809, I'll have to go back and check that. Anyhow, in the early 1800s, Napoleon comes charging into Germany, what we call Germany now, with a ragtag army made of mostly volunteer French farmers, and absolutely kicks the butt of the King of Prussia. Drives him all the way out of what would be called the state of Prussia, all the way up across Poland into an area that is now called Königsberg or Kaliningrad. It's the old Russian state of Kaliningrad. Prior to that, it was the German state city of Königsberg. So the king of Prussia said, how can we prevent this from happening? And he asked Fichte, the most famous philosopher in Germany, what can I do so that I don't get beat again by Napoleon? And Fichte's answer is going to astound you. I'll share it with you as soon as we get back. Stick around. We'll return in just a few minutes. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Dry, rough, and scaly. You've tried everything without results, but you haven't tried Carousel. Carousel with a K, a podiatrist's choice for years, now available in your store's foot care section. Carousel is dual-acting, an exfoliating moisturizer that gently removes dead skin while it moisturizes new cell layers underneath. Your feet will feel softer, smoother in just days. No wonder 9 out of 10 people choose Carousel over the product they usually use. Try Carousel. It's everything your feet need.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
Make the doctor's choice your choice. For better relief, advance to Advil.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. 247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video, call Power, Performance, and Possibilities. Call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Hi, I'm Steven Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Steven at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Look in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Stay.
to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking about our schools. Is the modern education system serving democracy or something else? And I was just giving you a little background on this thing. It started in 1806, actually, was the Battle of Jena. I went out and dug out my own book on this topic. I wrote a book called Beyond ADD, a chapter in there called Good German Schools Come to America. And the King of Prussia lost this battle to Napoleon. And so he says to Fichte, this famous German philosopher, Fichte is a big deal. I gave a speech at the university in Berlin. One of those senior moments. It was in the lecture, and when they introduced me, they said, in the lecture hall where Fichte spoke, you know, it's like, whoa. Anyhow, Fichte said to the king, to the Kaiser, he said, if you want to defeat Napoleon, you have to institute compulsory public education. He proposed an entirely new system of schooling. He said the problem is that, number one, your children, your soldiers, don't have their primary loyalty to the government. They have a primary loyalty to their families, so they're not as enthusiastic about running off to battle. Number two, they're not absolutely compliant with orders. When you say, you know, fire or don't fire till you see the whites of their eyes or whatever, they don't always follow orders. They're not orderly and organized like they should be. They don't have an understanding of the issues of the day, so they don't believe necessarily in the cause. So we can fix all this by creating compulsory public education. The fact that everybody goes to school means that everybody's going to end up understanding the same things. So it accomplishes the goal of creating a group of people who all believe the same way, who have the same worldview. By making it compulsory, now compulsory public education had only been tried twice in the past, before this German experiment in 1819 was when it began. It had only happened twice. Plato tried it for 1 year and gave up, decided it was a mistake. And the community of Salem, Massachusetts tried it. And after 2 years, they had to stop because several of their teachers had been convicted as witches. So this was something that really had never, you know, it had failed the two times it had been tried in the past. But Fichte said it has to be compulsory because then the children will realize that there is a force more powerful than their parents, a force that should be more feared and more respected than even their parents. And children, particularly young children, see their parents in a godlike way. You know, little 3-year-olds, 5-year-olds, their parents are these great big... And the Fichte said, no, we want them to see the state as being even greater, more powerful, more to be feared and respected than their parents. And by demonstrating to them that if they don't go to school, their parents go to jail, we will establish that the state is most to be feared. He said, we also want to make sure that they don't question authority. So we will put into place a system that was actually developed about 100 years earlier, in 1763, that where children have to raise their hands in order to ask a question. In other words, you have to ask the question, may I ask a question, please, before you ask a question, as a way of inculcating the idea of obedience. That they would learn not to question authority. That you would have an entire generation then, if this was done right, who would never grow up to revolt, and who would be good soldiers, who would be good civil servants, and who would be good workers for the growing German industry. Well, the German government did this. They put this into place. It began in 1819 and spread. And by the turn of the century, the 1870s, 1880s, as coming up on the turn of the century, Horace Mann went over to Germany. It was very fashionable then to go to Germany and get your PhD, your PhD. This was something that was created also by Fichte. Our question, does our modern education system serve democracy? Fichte invented the Doctor of Philosophy. He said, well, there should be a doctorate degree for philosophy. He was a philosopher, so he kind of created. So Horace Mann went over, spent his $500, got his PhD, and said, this is really cool. We need this in America because we have this problem of people who don't work in the factories when they should. We'll wrap this up when we come back from this break. Here with Tom Hartman, where democracy is still alive and well.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Laura Miller.
Even though there has been a lot of political maneuvering over the practice of companies moving their headquarters overseas to avoid federal taxes, many of those companies still do big business with the federal government. In the last year, such tax-dodging corporations made more than $1 billion off of federal contracts. The biggest winner was Accenture, a descendant of the Arthur Andersen accounting firm before it was broken up in the wave of corporate scandals. Last year, Bermuda-based Accenture made more than $660 million from federal government contracts.
Many women truck drivers have long complained of a glass ceiling in the trucking industry. Now, women truckers in Pittsburgh and Baltimore have a chance to make their case in court. A pair of lawsuits brought this week in two federal courts charges the PJAX trucking company routinely hired men over women and did nothing to stop managers from sexually harassing female employees. PJAX denies any charges of wrongdoing.
The British government says it will block the adoption of a constitution for the European Union unless some of the rights outlined in a draft charter are deleted. The draft includes several lists of rights that would be guaranteed to all European citizens. British ministers have a problem with the labor rights proposal. They believe workers should not be guaranteed the right to strike or act collectively to change or improve their working conditions, and they do not want citizens to have rights which may supersede UK law.
Civil rights are on hold in Peru as the government tries to quell massive strikes that have emptied schoolhouses and slowed commerce in the South American nation to a crawl. Thousands of Peru's farmers are demanding greater tariffs and a reduction in the sales tax put on their crops. School teachers, meanwhile, are continuing their two-week strike for the raises they were promised 2 years ago but never received. Hospital workers and judicial clerks are striking as well.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you worried that the road less traveled is a dead end? I feel your pain. It's not easy to be positive and happy and peaceful in a world that's so often negative and filled with war and hatred and SARS, but we can do it together. Join me, Nancy Skinner, for a radio evolution. It's Nancy Skinner's Radio Vox Populi, that's Voice of the People. It's a program where people talk about the world around us and the one we want to create.
That's Nancy Skinner's Radio Vox Pop, weekdays from 10 to noon Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Peter Werby reminding you that my show is now being broadcast from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network. It's the same show filled with engaged, intelligent talk featuring not just you, the listener, but also a wide range of interesting guests. So if you want to leave right-wing hate radio in the 20th century where it belongs, join me, Peter Werby, weekdays 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time for something entirely different.
I want peace. You want peace.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world.
Welcome back to Talk Radio for the Rest of Us. Does our modern education system serve democracy, and in particular what's being done to it now by the No Child Left Behind bill, which we haven't quite gotten to yet, but we will. If you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. And PJ in Texas is on the line. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, PJ. PJ?
A bit nervous.
Hey, try it again there, PJ.
Hi, Mr. Hartman. Hello, how are you?
Hi, I'm Tom. Mr. Hartman's my father.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad you called. What's on your mind?
First of all, I wanted to ask, please forgive my nervousness. I'm just
That's
a little
quite all right. We're just talking here.
I wanted to talk about public education a little bit. I recently graduated from a Texas public high school.
Mm-hmm.
I have attended...
Congratulations, by the way.
Say what?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That, you know, that's a significant accomplishment these days.
Particularly in Texas, but anyway.
Yeah.
I attended two public high schools in Texas, one for my freshman and sophomore years, and one in my junior and senior year.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one I attended was a rural, local high school. Very sort of small school, closed community, about 410 students. But the class sizes were still about 30 students per class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The second school I attended was a little bit different. It was the Texas Academy of Leadership and the Humanities. It was it is a legislative Texas state program that was designed to allow honors Texas students to finish their last 2 years of high school by going into a college campus and taking college courses.
Sounds marvelous.
It's a really remarkable program. And mm-hmm. they also focus a lot on service learning. Each
mm-hmm.
student has a service project, which they connect academics and service to the community and how that makes you a better person.
That sounds great, PJ. What's your point with this?
I wanted to say that I've kept in touch with my teachers from my old high school, and I've learned about a lot of the cuts that they've had to make because of the budget crisis that Texas particularly is having that was left to us by our former governor, George W. Bush.
Yes.
And I was told that they are cutting some of the, quote, fluff courses.
Mm-hmm.
And those fluff courses include European history. They include teen leadership.
Mm-hmm.
They include media analysis.
So we can't have people analyzing the media.
Of course not. Of course not. And I just wanted to say that I think that the first high school that I attended, the regular public high school, definitely failed me in developing my analytic abilities. It failed in allowing me academic opportunities to experience democracy. I think it failed miserably mm-hmm. in that. And I just hope that that's not a nationwide phenomenon.
Well, it is, PJ. It's something that's happening all over the country, and increasingly, because Texas is not alone in this budget crisis. Texas is one of the states on a per capita basis that has one of the worst budget crises in the United States because George Bush cut taxes every year that he was in office and left the state with a huge deficit, which they're now having to slash services in order to respond to, which was the agenda, by the way. I mean, let's give this guy credit where credit is due.
He did accomplish what he said he was going to do.
Yeah, exactly. And now he's doing it on a federal level. And, you know, step one is to cut off the oxygen. And then as the government begins to turn blue and start to die, then you go in with a meat cleaver and cut away what they consider to be the fat, what many of us consider to be the essence of what makes the middle class work and what makes democracy work.
Right.
So good point, PJ. Thank you for the call. I appreciate your calling in. Where did we go with this? Well, after the early 19th century, our question here, how does our modern education system serve democracy, or does it, and what's going on? Horace Mann traveled around the country, and he was an enthusiast, an advocate of the German public education system, which was this grand experiment. And he tried to sell it to industry. He was like an industrial consultant of his day. And industry wasn't buying. He would go in and he'd say, hey, you want to have good workers for your factories? Help the local community create public schools or create them and pay for them yourselves. Because in Germany, many of the first schools were actually combined with spinneries where they'd make clothing. They were called Spinnenschulens, spinning schools. And half the day the children would work and half the day they'd attend school. And this was the old German tradition from the late 1700s, actually. And industry wasn't biting. And so finally, in the 1880s, as I recall, he got the community of Boston, it was in, actually the state of Massachusetts, had been taken over. the legislature had been taken over by a right-wing secret society, a Protestant secret society that was anti-Catholic, was their main unifying force. It was called the Know-Nothing, it was called the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner. And their slogan, when they met each other, their secret password was, I know nothing. And so it was called the Know-Nothing Legislature. You can read about this in your history books, the Know-Nothing Legislature and their brief reign of power in Massachusetts in the 1880s. And Horace Mann pitched them on this, and they had this big problem with all these Catholics from Ireland coming over to Boston. The Catholics had outnumbered the Protestants, and this Protestant legislative secret society was very worried about this, about this shift in potential political power. And Horace Mann said, well, if you want to break the back of the Catholics and stop any Catholic rebellions, simply impose on them compulsory education. And you can change their thinking. You can change the thinking of the next generation. And so they did this, and they met strong resistance. And the community of Barnstable, according to John Taylor Gatto, was the last one to go. And it was actually an armed rebellion by parents who did not want to send their children to these public schools. And the militia came out and walked the children to school at gunpoint. And that thus began compulsory public education in the United States, with the explicit goal of creating and educating essentially an underclass, as it were, a class of people who could work and only could work for the corporate powers, as it were. So now we fast forward to today. We have this school system, and Woodrow Wilson back in the 19-teens, when he was one of the education bigwigs, had made the comment that we have only two things we can do with education. We can educate people to work in factories, or we can educate them to go on to higher education, but you can't do both at the same time. We have to choose which we're going to do with our public schools. And for many years, there were actually two tracks in schools. When I went to school in the 1950s, 1960s, the two tracks were college prep and vocational ed, and you basically made those choices. When we lived in Germany, and this was a system that Fichte came up with, by the way, when we lived in Germany, our son was 7 years old, and that was second grade. That was the year that you sat down with the teachers and decided which track your child was going to go on, whether they'd go into the Volkshochschule or the Realschule, the people's school, the work, you know, where you end up in the trades, or the real school, where you end up then going to gymnasium and university. And that system was in large place here, but it's somewhat disintegrated over the years. But nonetheless, we had our schools in many ways. Our schools became more egalitarian, more liberal arts, more inclined toward things like critical thinking skills, especially through the 1950s, 1960s, and into the early 1970s. And then now we come with this No Child Left Behind program. When this first came out, I was curious about this. I was writing a book on corporate influence in America called Unequal Protection. And I contacted Jim Jeffords, who's my senator, and I said, what do you know about this? And he was just leaving the Republican Party at that time over this issue. He was so upset about it. And he got me a Congressional Research Service report from July 9th, 2001 that is not available to the public. This is something prepared for senators and congressmen that talked about this. And I'll tell you about that in just a second. If you'd like to be on the program today, though, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. And Ken in Worcester, Mass., would like to talk about the education system. Ken, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom. I travel the East Coast quite a bit. Right now I'm up in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. But I go through Florida quite a bit, and when I'm home, I substitute. Now, home is Tennessee, and I thought, gee, it'd be a neat idea while I'm on the road when I'm not doing my regular job. I might substitute a little bit. So checking around in Florida, I found that Jebby Dearest has changed the rules there. And basically, Bay County in particular told me, we don't hire substitutes anymore. If we want a substitute, we will pull out the janitor, just anybody, you know, that's already on our payroll.
Anybody who's cheap, in other words.
Yeah, anybody who's cheap. I've seen this over and over with Florida schools. And the thing that absolutely baffles me is that many of my clients who are quite conservatives will rail against the policies, but they'll still vote for this guy. I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, I think that you know, an incredible snow job has been done. What happened to our quote for today, our Bushism? George Bush's speech in March 24th, 2001, where he said, you can fool some of the people all the time, and those are the ones you have to concentrate on. They've been concentrating on them, and they are, in many cases, now there are many well-intentioned Republicans out there, but there, many of them are those folks.
I'm very glad you used that quote. I do some writing on the net myself, and I think I'm going to use that one in some of my articles. It's a great one. I just can't believe. And the thing is, he says these things, and people say, oh, it's a joke. I don't think it's a joke. It's like the dictator joke, supposedly. I don't think he's joking. I think he's serious.
Well, I'm suspecting that this was said as a joke, but Freud's old comment about Freudian slips and jokes that there is no such thing as a humor. But in any case, Ken, thank you for weighing in with your point there and sharing your insights with us. Thank you. You too. I appreciate your calling. Thank you. So we come up to today. So I asked Jim Jeffords, what's the deal with this thing? And he gives me this report, and this report says that the Bush plan, quote, would authorize a total, well, first of all, it says, it talks about the state of things. And it says, estimated aggregate state-level expenditures for assessment programs. Now, what that is bureaucrat speak for means the amount of money the states are paying for testing in fiscal year 2001 is $422.8 million. Then the report goes on to say that this No Child Left Behind Act would authorize a total of $400 million for state assessment development grants in fiscal year 2002, authorize $110 million for expansion of NEAP state assessments, authorize $50 million for state performance awards, all in addition to the $422 million that was currently available to the states that they were already spending on testing. In other words, these are my words now. That's the end of the quote from the report. In other words, the testing industry would more than double in size in a single year. And I thought, there is a corporation or a couple of very large corporations who are set to make hundreds of millions of dollars. So certainly they would want to give a few million dollars to a politician who sets it up. In profits and revenues from the No Child Left Behind Act. But it gets even deeper than that. It gets even stranger than that. Some other fascinating insights that a few other people have shared with us. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. And Dwayne in Indiana has a comment. Dwayne, does our modern education system serve democracy?
No, certainly it doesn't. Tom, I have to tell you that you have opened my eyes quite a bit. I thought I was fairly educated till I started listening to your show since I bought this Sirius radio.
Well, thank you, Dwayne.
I mean, this compulsory education, I mean, it's frightening what the implications that you just mentioned from what you just mentioned. I don't even know how to attack it. I mean, I'm so awed by it.
Well, the way that a lot of people deal with it, what we did with our kids, our first went through the public education system, and in retrospect, I think was wounded by it. Our second, we moved into a private school in his middle school years, and he went from not doing all that great in public school to just doing spectacularly. He just graduated from college, and our youngest we homeschooled from the time she was about 13, and so there's a lot of alternatives out there for kids, and a lot of people are taking them. I mean, homeschooling has gone from under 500,000 kids 10 years ago to I think it's 4 million children now who are being homeschooled in the United States, and it's growing rapidly. So a lot of people are saying no to the public schools. But my concern is that the public schools are in the dire straits they are and are making the mess of our children that they are because they are the victims of a political agenda themselves.
I mean, that's certainly true. And are you an historian, Tom?
No, I am an author. I have 12 books in print, and I'm an old radio guy. I used to be on the radio back in the 60s and 70s, and in fact, I was a news reporter back then. And so I write about these topics, and writing about them, you have to research them. So I have a lot of knowledge in a bunch of small areas, you know, where I've actually drilled down deep enough to write a book about something. So,
well, let me assure you, I'm going to start reading your books. Because, from the last 2 weeks, I mean, listening to Jefferson's notes that you read that I never heard of before, I feel like I'm back in elementary school. And
well,
I want to learn more, believe me.
I hope that's fun for you, Dwayne. Thank you. Thank you for your kind comments. I appreciate your calling. Thanks for dropping by our radio home here. By the way, our chat room is alive and active. We've got a half a dozen folks in the chat room. If you go to www.tomhartmann.com, click on the radio show, and then click on the chat room, that'll take you to the International Trade Forum and CompuServe. Click the chat button, and it'll drop you into the chat room where a lively conversation is going on right now and pretty much every day that we talk about these things. So does our modern education system serve democracy? We're going to drill a little deeper with this, and we have Doug in Budding, California on the line. Doug, if you can hang on through this commercial break, we'll be right back. Stick around, folks.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Announcing the Take Back America Conference, a progressive policy and action summit, June 4th, 5th, and 6th in Washington, D.C. On June 4th, 5th, and 6th, over 1,000 progressive leaders and activists from across the country will gather in the nation's capital to mobilize Take Back America and proclaim a new era of progressivism. This will be the largest and most diverse gathering of prominent progressive leaders in many years, and its impact will be dramatic. This is an unprecedented effort at a critical time in our nation's history. It is essential that the progressive majority develop a strategy that will confront the real issues America is facing with initiatives that can and will make a difference. For details and to register, visit www.ourfuture.org or call 800-833-1354. That's 800-833-1354.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, "At a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore"? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Yeah.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All the world over, so easy to see. People everywhere just want to be free. Listen, please listen, that's the way it should be. Peace in the valley, people got to be free.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking about, does our modern education system serve democracy? We have just a few minutes left in this hour, and Doug in Budding, California called 1-800-TALK-YES to be on the program. Welcome, Doug.
Hi, how you doing?
How are you?
Good.
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Very good, thanks. I just wanted to thank you for the wealth of information you bring. And I know we don't have much time. I was just going to make this point about the education system. It's great that we have a public education system. The trouble is they probably would prefer you to be ignorant, if you know what I mean. So if we downgrade the public education, you still have people going to school so they can learn obedience to the system and say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and learn the approved American history, but still you'll end up being ignorant by the time you graduate.
Yeah, Doug, I think this is one of the problems that John from Springfield had called about, you know, that we're not teaching critical thinking skills. We're not giving people the background and understanding of the big picture so that they can even understand what American democracy is. And we've got this test-driven culture. I was hoping in this hour to get a little deeper into this, but I am becoming very quickly of the opinion that the agenda behind the agenda, that the hidden agenda at work here, is to so bankrupt our schools and so force them with this No Child Left Behind program that is devastating our schools right now, imposing testing and having them strip everything else out, that we're setting them up for essentially corporatization. That when these schools fail, the No Child Left Behind law requires that the schools be available to private corporations to be taken over. And then it sets these unreachable standards for success. We'll get into this in some more detail tomorrow. I think it's really worth coming back to this or later on in the week. But, Doug, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does make sense to me, unfortunately. And I agree with the lack of critical thinking. Are you familiar with Ellen Langer, psychologist?
I'm not. No,
I'm not. She has a couple books on mindful learning, and basically you teach conditional knowledge.
Yes. Sounds good, Doug.
Yeah,
Doug, that music means that we've run out of time. Thank you very much for calling, Doug. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be on for the next hour right after the news. Stick around.
From those beds, Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
truth seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Two flight attendants are recovering today after they were attacked aboard a domestic flight in Australia. A man with a sharp wooden object headed toward the cockpit of the Qantas flight from Melbourne and threatened to crash the plane. A police officer says details of what happened and what may have prompted the attack are still being gathered.
We believe he was trying to take over the plane. That's all I can say at this stage.
The man was reportedly restrained by passengers and then immediately taken into custody once the plane was able to safely land. Australia's Transport Minister John Anderson says although the act appears to have been premeditated, he doesn't think it was tied to any other act of terrorism. American intelligence officials say they're growing more confident they've found proof of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction program. True, no actual chemicals or biological agents have been found yet, but officials say they're certain now they've got two sections of mobile labs that would have been used to make those agents. More from correspondent Priscilla Huff.
Biological weapons agent production is the only consistent logical purpose for these vehicles. That's the conclusion of a report from the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency. Top inspectors, including an international team, have been examining two trailers, one captured by Kurdish allies, the other found near the city of Mosul. The new report says the U.S. has confirmation from an Iraqi chemical engineer that these were the type of mobile labs he used in the production of chemical or biological weapons. According to the U.S., this is the strongest evidence to date that Iraq was hiding a biological warfare program. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
And a message today has been sent to South Korea from the communist North warning sending warships across the disputed border could result in, quote, irrevocable serious consequences. The official North Korean news agency broadcast the warning following what officials in South Korea said was three consecutive days of incursions into their waters by northern fishing vessels. The North, though, said it was South Korea that had sent those ships across the de facto border. News agency said, quote, the ceaseless infiltration of warships into the waters where serious conflicts occurred last year cannot be construed otherwise than a deliberate provocation on the part of South Korea.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me.
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
New Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas says he expects to reach a deal with the militant group Hamas next week to halt attacks on Israelis. However, a senior Hamas official says he isn't aware any deals being negotiated. Abbas and Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon are set to meet with President Bush next week in Jordan. A new alert from the FBI is warning law enforcement agencies nationwide to be prepared for the possibility of chemical and biological attacks. A number of agents that could be used are described in the bulletin, suggesting terrorist organizations could be intent on attacks that would produce mass casualties.
John, fists,
something I must tell you. I want to be free.
Oh, Helen, you want to be free with the wind in your hair, life without care?
No, I want to be free of those overnight laxatives that give me cramps.
You want Freelax, the only overnight laxative that gives you stimulant-free, cramp-free relief in just two caplets.
Oh, John, I just wish everything could be that dependable.
Freelax is the free of everything you hate about laxatives. Laxative, look for it in the bright green box. Use only as directed.
One of the two D.C. area sniper suspects is scheduled to be in court today. The details from correspondent Allison Brown.
Lawyers for sniper suspect John Allen Muhammad will argue a number of motions today in a Prince William County, Virginia courtroom. Their main argument will be to thwart the prosecution's plan to seek the death penalty. At issue, whether Muhammad was actually the trigger man in a fatal shooting at a gas station in the county last October. Prosecutors plan to prove that Muhammad was an instigator to the crime, making him eligible for capital punishment under Virginia law. Allison Brown, Manassas, Virginia.
And the parents of a 26-year-old Tampa, Florida woman who was raped and killed while attending graduate school at Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge say they're now relieved a suspect in her death is currently in custody. DNA evidence has allegedly linked Derek Todd Lee to that crime. Lee is also suspected of killing at least four other women in Louisiana. He was extradited back to Louisiana yesterday after being arrested in Atlanta Tuesday night. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with another Car Clinic Minute. Oxymorons. You know, the things that just don't seem to go together, like jumbo shrimp or deafening silence. How about new car and service manager? You'll be surprised. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. 10 years ago, I discovered a company with the best fuel injector cleaner, BG Products. Now wait, there's more. To do the job right requires cleaning both the fuel and the air induction systems. The process is called BG Complete Induction System Service. If you want your vehicle to run like new, don't settle for anything less. To find a shop near you to perform this service, go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com.
If thinking of the service manager while inking your new car deal seems like an oxymoron, think again. Though today's cars are certainly more roadworthy than their predecessors, they can still break. In fact, the experts at the L.A. Auto Show report that automotive repair is a $200 billion business, and one of every three cars serviced returns for additional work. So ask your new car salesperson for an introduction to the service manager. It's a small investment with a big payoff at repair time and for maintenance checks. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. You're listening to the program where we don't get our talking points from right-wing think tanks or the RNC, as they are distributed to talk show hosts all across the nation every single day. Well, sometimes we actually use them to say, what's with this? And we'll be getting, in fact, to a conservative alert a little later. One of the folks in our chat room had a question. Well, let me get back to that in just a second. Patrick in Kentucky has called 1-800-TALK-YES. And had a question or comment. Patrick, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yes, Tom. I'm calling from here in Kentucky, which, as you know, ranks 47th in literacy. Somewhere
it's
around.
It's unfortunate.
That,
yeah.
Ranking. And I just had a horrible time, you know, in school, and I can tell you some nightmares. But I had a specific question. Maybe we can go into that later. But about Dennis Kucinich, as to why exactly he's supporting Leave No Child Behind. Is he trying to revamp it?
Well, there is a second piece of legislation that was proposed by the woman who wrote the book, Leave No Child Behind, whose name is escaping me at the moment. And several senators, Christopher Dodd was there, I know, for the proposing it. Several senators and ex-senators and whatnot got all together, and it's called actually Leave No Child Behind, or Really Leave No Child Behind Act. And it contradicts the existing Leave No Child Behind Act. And so maybe he's supporting that. I don't know. Maybe he just doesn't know what's in the old one. I don't know Kucinich's positions on all these issues, so I really can't answer. Maybe one of our listeners is a Kucinich devotee and would know the answer to that, and they could give us a call at 1-800-TALK-YES and let us know.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Stan. I appreciate your calling. Thanks very much, Patrick in Kentucky. Stan in Birmingham, Alabama has a question. Welcome to the program, Stan.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom.
Or was it a comment? Good afternoon.
Yeah, I just had a few comments. The most influential person during the 20th century on American education was B.F. Skinner.
Oh, yeah.
Skinner
was Mr. Behaviorism.
B.F. Skinner was to American education what Joe McCarthy was to political democracy. B.F. Skinner basically copied the public education system of Nazi Germany. The central formula was 50% sports mania and 50% indoctrination to create blind obedience to authority. Now, mm-hmm. B.F. Skinner studied everything under the sun that the Nazis did with public education and created the B.F. Skinner revolution during the 1950s. Now, the official line today is that from big business and big government officials is that the B.F. Skinner influence has been eliminated from our public schools.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing could be further from the truth.
Well,
we not only inherited Nazi Germany scientists, we inherited the public school mind control methods that went on in Nazi Germany. Finally, B.F. Skinner served the purpose of the moneyed classes to help squash FDR's New Deal. It was part of a long-term plan to completely take FDR's New Deal back. Of course, B.F. Skinner came from Harvard, and in creating this revolution that other Ivy League schools jumped on board with to destroy our public school systems, this was part mm-hmm. of the formula for completely taking FDR's New Deal back and taking us to an 1890s system of government where the robber barons would rule again without any question from the masses.
And they're working at it all over again, Stan.
Yeah.
I think you're spot on in your analysis there. I'm not as familiar as you are with all the details. I'm certainly familiar with B.F. Skinner and what he did and his impact on education, which is ongoing. I've written a series of books on education and attention deficit disorder and learning disabilities, and you particularly see this in the writings of the folks who are on the take charge of your children side of, you know, the that we need our schools to be more regimented, more military school-like in order to make our children more compliant.
Ironically, TV has become our most powerful, influential tool for education, except it's really indoctrination. And it gets people's brain waves operating on the
theta. Yeah.
And it's doing tremendous damage. We've got to wean ourselves away from TV. We've got to set up a massive number of hundreds of thousands of decentralized think tanks, liberal and progressive think tanks in this country, to counter the influence of extreme right-wing think tanks, which have been far more powerful. That's been the main engine behind the extreme right wing. Finally, the Nuremberg trials were really just a sham show. Most Nazi officers were exempted from prosecution and welcomed with open arms by United States intelligence, as I think you well know.
Sure.
So today we've inherited most of that bad genie of what went on in Nazi Germany, but it's sugar-coated fascism. And that's one of the reasons it's so difficult to overcome sugar-coated fascism, as I call it. It's much more difficult to deal with than overt fascism for obvious reasons.
Good point, Stan.
Thank you very much,
point.
And we'll be back in touch.
Okay, thanks for being on the program, Stan. I appreciate your call. One of our members in our chat room asked the question, what about the minimum wage? Has the conservative story on the minimum wage is that it kills jobs, but it seems that the minimum wage, increasing the minimum wage, would pump money back into the economy. And if you buy the idea that putting stimulating economic growth is a good thing, then that seems like that would be a good thing. In fact, the minimum wage laws and the widespread growth of unionism were two of the largest components in creating and building the middle class in the United States between the middle 1940s up through the 1970s. And as the minimum wage has become less and less significant, as it has been relatively stagnant all these years, whereas inflation has leaped ahead, what has happened is that the purchasing power of the poorest of Americans, which is a significant number of people, has collapsed. And yeah, you're absolutely right. If you give money to people at the bottom of the economic pyramid, they will spend it immediately, and that will produce an immediate fiscal stimulus. We need a livable wage in the United States, in my opinion. So what's happening in the news? Last night, it was interesting, Bill O'Reilly on his program went through a rant about how the L.A. Times was biased in their reporting, and then they flashed to a news report that starts out, smoking gun, and they're talking about these trucks in Iraq. We heard about them on the newscast here on this station, or on this network here just 15 minutes ago. And this idea that these Iraqi trailers were weapon labs. But when you read the story a little farther, I'm looking at the AP story today by John J. Lumpkin, which was in our local newspaper. It turns out that, you know, they found these two trucks a month ago or several weeks ago. And they contain absolutely no germ warfare agents. And these folks have the ability to detect down to a few spores. I mean, if there had ever been biological agents in these things, they would know. But they, no, there is no evidence that they were ever used for this. And so the CIA is they're in trouble right now. One of two things happened. Either the CIA and the other intelligence services, the United States government, lied to George Bush, and then he conveyed that lie to us about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, contradicting what the actual weapons inspectors had been saying for almost a decade, or they were incompetent. And the Bush administration is trying to spin it that the CIA was incompetent. Now, there are some who suggest that the CIA, and in fact, George Tenet was on the record as saying this, that the CIA was really of the opinion that there were no weapons of mass destruction, or if there were, they weren't a threat to us, and that the Bush administration was the one who came up, you know, who cooked the books, who came up with this scheme. But in any case, the CIA is taking the heat for it right now. And so they're really under pressure to come up with weapons of mass destruction. So they trot out these trucks that they found a couple of weeks ago and say, well, this is it. No, there's no weapons of mass destruction in them. Well, what could they have been used for? Well, according to Scott Ritter, who was there and who inspected these things, these trucks were used to manufacture hydrogen to fill weather balloons that would support artillery. So that you have to do this. I mean, Scott Ritter used to be a Marine and used to be involved with artillery, and he said, you know, before you shoot long-range artillery, you send up a weather balloon and you see which way the winds are blowing so you can calibrate your weapons. And the CIA looks at that and says, well, that's a possibility. Let me quote you from the story. Quote, the Iraqis had a motivation to inefficiently produce a biological agent. See, the point that they make is that these portable weapon labs, whatever they were going to produce, would have done it inefficiently. They wouldn't have done a particularly good job of producing biological warfare agents. In fact, they're saying that they could have only produced an unconcentrated liquid slurry. In other words, something useless. And that it would have been inefficient for them to produce hydrogen for these balloons. Well, Ritter says that they were there to produce hydrogen for the balloons. And, in fact, and I quote from the story, captured Iraqi scientists have said the vehicles were for producing hydrogen for weather balloons in support of artillery. The report, the CIA report, acknowledges the trailers could be used to make hydrogen. Now, here's where it gets a little interesting. But says the effort would be inefficient compared with widely available commercial hydrogen generation systems. So they're saying, okay, these things could be used to make hydrogen for the weather balloons. And Scott Ritter says that's what they were doing, that he was there, he saw it. And the UN's weapons inspectors have chronicled this. But the CIA says, but now, we don't think so. We think that they really wanted to use them to make this biological warfare slurry, even though that would not be usable for anything. Because there are commercially available hydrogen generators that they should have bought. Conveniently ignoring the fact that we had a ban on the sale of things like hydrogen generators to Iraq for the last decade. So, of course, they had to go to something less efficient. This is spin, folks. This is nothing but spin. In China, interesting event today, very disturbing. The China Intermediate People's Court, this is, I'm reading from the BBC News, sentenced geologist Jin Haike, 27, and Zhu Wai, a 28-year-old journalist, for Beijing's Consumer Daily to 10 years each in prison. Additionally, a 31-year-old computer engineer and a 29-year-old freelance writer were given 8-year sentences. What did these people do? What was the heinous crime that they committed? They created an internet-based discussion area called the New Youth Society, dedicated to exploring democracy and social reform. Now, what does Rupert Murdoch have to do with all this? We'll get to that right after this break. Stay with us. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Life is full of decisions. For example, taking batting practice in front of a picture window.
Come on, show me the heat!
Now that's a bad decision. Fortunately, buying a GM-certified used vehicle that's fully reconditioned and backed by GM is always a good decision. GM-certified used vehicles. The right way, the right car.
Now qualified buyers get 3.9% APR financing on select GM-certified used vehicles from participating Chevrolet, Pontiac, Oldsmobile, Buick, and GMC dealers. Length of contract limited. Take delivery by June 30th, 2003. See dealer for details or call 1-888-999-7880.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express Lawsuit Funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit? Bad credit? No credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
You have to admire the compassionate conservatism of the only president we presently have. George W. has looked around the country, surveyed the growing economic woes of our people, and reached this compassionate conclusion. The rich are hurting. Feeling their pain, George has responded with a $400 billion tax giveback for these privileged ones, eliminating the taxes that they pay on their stock profits. But this is not merely a matter of compassion, says George. It's a matter of justice. The assertion by Bush is that taxing the stock dividends of big investors is nothing less than the horror of double taxation. After all, claim the Bushites, corporations already pay taxes on these profits, so the 10% of Americans who own 90% of all corporate stock shouldn't pay again when the profits are distributed to them. George, who likes things simple, says simply, it's not fair to tax something twice. Yoo-hoo, George. We know you've never worked for a living, but have none of your hotshot corporate economists mentioned to you that working people have their income taxed not just twice, but multiple times? Check it out. Our monthly wages are hit for federal and state income taxes, Social Security tax, unemployment, and Medicare taxes. Then, these same wages are slapped with ever-rising sales taxes, gasoline tax, property taxes, highway and subway tolls, numerous fees, and if we buy a six-pack to try forgetting taxes, we're hit with a liquor tax. This is Jim Hightower saying, if Bush really gave a damn about fairness, he wouldn't be singling out a handful of rich elites for more favoritism. He'd focus instead on restoring some progressive balance to a skewed tax system that grossly favors the rich and global corporations at the expense of America's wage-earning majority. To get the truth about who's paying what and about how Bush's policies are ripping off the middle class, call Citizens for Tax Justice, 202-626-3780.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And the beat goes on. The beat goes on. Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're talking about the rest of the news. China has jailed these web dissidents. Now, they made a mistake that Rupert Murdoch didn't make. Back a few years ago, he wanted to get a satellite news system, sort of like Fox News or Star News or Channel Sky News in the UK, which he owns, into China. It's called Star News. And so but the Chinese objected to the fact that he was carrying BBC because it was like news of what's really going on, and they didn't like that. So he pulled it off the system. And Chinese President Zhang, quote, expressed appreciations for the efforts made by world media mogul Rupert Murdoch in presenting China objectively and cooperating with the Chinese press over the past 2 years, end quote. Murdoch, in exchange, quote, expressed his admiration for China's tremendous achievements in every respect over the past 2 decades, end quote. And now News Corporation has a joint venture with the Communist Party mouthpiece, The People's Daily, producing an internet service with technology information. Well, these folks weren't quite as savvy as Rupert Murdoch. They thought that you could speak out about democracy. They posted articles on the internet critical of the Chinese government. Their sentencing follows a trial last week of Huang Hui, a Chinese web operator who is the first one prosecuted for internet crimes. One of the men sentenced on Wednesday, Zhu Wai, told the court he had been brutally beaten and tortured with electric shocks to his genitals. He had to be carried out of the court after he struck his head on the judge's desk and was knocked unconscious in the closed proceedings. And the BBC goes on to point out that China employs 30,000 people to watch what its citizens are doing online. Now, there's a precedent for this in American history. Back in 1798, John Adams, the Federalist John Adams, second president of the United States, and the Federalist Party, which controlled Congress at that time, pushed through the Alien and Sedition Acts, which made it a crime to criticize the government of the United States. They said, quote, it is a crime to, quote, excite against them the hatred of the good people of the United States or to stir up sedition, end quote. Nearly 24 cases under this act were brought against Jeffersonian activists and editors. And even as he left office, Adam was continuing to say that this legislation was necessary on national security grounds. Jefferson protested this by leaving Washington he was vice president at the time, by leaving Washington on the day that Adams signed this legislation. And then he wrote a series of articles, which became known as the Kentucky Resolutions. Adams never found out that Jefferson actually wrote these things, saying that it was the natural right of individuals in the United States to refuse to implement a federal law if the state legislature believes it to be unconstitutional. under these laws, under the Alien and Sedition Acts, one of the first people prosecuted, the first victim of the act, was one of my fellow Vermonters, Representative Matthew Lyon. This was in 1798, who had fought in the Revolution. In a letter to the Vermont Journal, I'm reading from an article by Nat Hentoff, Freedom 101. In a letter to the Vermont Journal, Representative Lyon had attacked the Adams administration for, quote, its unbounded thirst for ridiculous pomp, foolish adulation, and selfish avarice, end quote. He was paraded under guard through the town of Vergennes, Vermont, and marched into a 12-by-16-foot cell. When he heard about this, Thomas Jefferson said, quote, I know not which mortifies me most, that I should fear to write what I think, or that my country bear such a state of things. Four of the five most important opposition newspapers were imprisoned. They actually even threw into jail the grandson of Ben Franklin for writing something about the government. Well, when Jefferson became president, he not only pardoned and freed all these people, but he also remitted the fines they had paid. And that was essentially the end of the Alien and Sedition Acts. It can happen anywhere, folks. Stay with us. I'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Huge amounts of methane gas are trapped in ice crystals on the ocean floor, but the gas doesn't always stay there. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Methane is the natural gas that we often use for heating and cooking. It's produced by the decomposition of dead plant and animal matter, and in the oceans, huge amounts of methane have accumulated on the seafloor over millions of years. This gas is suspended in tiny pockets of water and crystals of ice within the ocean floor. New research shows that in the past, large amounts of methane have been released from the ocean floor, and the gas changed the marine environment. If that happened again, it could have a major impact on ocean ecology and possibly on the global climate. Kai Hinrichs is an oceanographer with the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. He studied the fossils of microbes and used them to track methane emissions off the coast of California in the Santa Barbara Basin. Hinrichs says massive amounts of methane were released into the water more than 40,000 years ago. He says the release appears to be linked to warmer water. He says even a small increase in water temperature could have been enough to melt the methane-rich crystals of ice.
I would say in terms of the temperatures in the bottom waters, 1 or 2 degrees could already have a very significant effect on methane that is stored relatively shallow in the sediment.
Hinrichs says another cause might have been an underwater landslide that stirred up the sediment and released the gas. Methane is a greenhouse gas, and it's possible a massive release of it from the ocean floor in the future could warm the atmosphere. Hinrichs says he's not sure if the gas would affect climate, but he says it would definitely affect the ocean food chain. Microorganisms that use methane would grow more abundant and use up oxygen in the water, and marine plants and animals that could not tolerate the new conditions would not survive for long. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it. Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting from sea to shining sea, bringing you uncommon sense from the radical middle. We have a special section every Thursday afternoon, try to bring you some information that you might not have read about in the corporate controlled press or just in general. It's things that might be new and interesting, our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Maybe. Henry Willis is the author of a book called Earth's Future Climate and several other books. And Henry has written a book that is one of the, in my opinion, one of the best and most thorough with regard to what's going on with our climate, particularly because, Henry, you're talking about thermohaline circulation, which I just wrote about in a book that I have coming out this fall, and I haven't seen much in the press about. Henry Willis, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom, thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
I'm really glad you're bringing up these topics. A couple of quick questions. First of all, Henry, Fred Singer's name keeps popping up. Are you familiar with Fred?
No, I'm not. I've heard about him, but I've not had the opportunity very much to read on him yet.
Okay, great. We can pass that then. The research agendas. In your book, you talk about how research agendas are being skewed by who's paying the bills. What's going on with this with regard to global warming?
Well, one of the reasons I got to writing my book was because I kept reading these very skewed research reports regarding agenda warming, especially regarding greenhouse gases. When I dug down to the bottom of it, I found out that there were corporates behind the research.
The research that was indicating
people were for the greenhouse gases because their academic agendas were supporting that position, or they were against it because they were basically hired by the big oil companies. Say, no, greenhouse gases are not causing it. And the bottom line is, greenhouse gases have nothing to do with global warming.
Okay. Explain that.
Well, global warming is basically a natural global cycle going back about 350 million years. I recently spoke with a good friend of mine, Dr. Sandra Wood at Cambridge University. And she reported this cycle back during the Devonian period, which is about 350 million years ago, where there was a rise and fall of the ocean's levels by 350 feet. This is the same thing that we have seen over the last 10,000 years on the Earth since the last ice age. It was a rise of the ocean level by 350 feet. And the cycle is basically a cycle called the Gliesberg cycle. And this is a 70-year cycle in the output of solar radiation from the sun. Right at the moment, and especially if you go on the Internet and read anything about solar flares, we are at the peak of the Gliesberg cycle. And this is a cycle that is well-published in scientific literature. It's a 70-year cycle. We're right at the peak of it. The peak means that this is a period of intense solar cycles. Now, if I may explain, everybody's aware that the sun goes through a 11-year cycle of solar flares.
Sunspot. Right.
You know, sunspots, they're called. If you were at the bottom of the Gliesberg cycle, you were at the lower level of the sunspot cycle, which means the sunspot cycle that occurs at the bottom of the Gliesberg cycle is less than a sunspot cycle that occurs at the top of a Gliesberg cycle. We are at the top of a Gliesberg cycle, and this is a 70-year cycle, and you can see it. If you go back 70 years, you go back to about 1932, 1933, and we have the great, Dust Bowl.
Yeah, the Dust Bowl.
If you go back 35 years in the scientific literature, you will find out that the scientists are complaining about the Earth cooling, and they're claiming it's cooling,
right.
Guess what? Because the pollutants and greenhouse gases in the atmosphere are blocking the solar radiation from coming to the Earth.
But you're suggesting it's the Gliesberg cycle instead. So you're saying, Henry, let me get this straight. You're saying that the increase in carbon dioxide, for example, in the atmosphere from 280 parts per million to over 340 parts per million over the last 35, 40 years is having no effect on the atmosphere, the atmospheric temperature?
Well, no, it's not. Because if you look at the paleological history of the Earth, we are actually carbon dioxide deficient compared to past ages. If you go back to the Cretaceous, when everybody claims that great asteroid hit the Earth,
mm-hmm.
there was 28 times the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as there is today.
It was much hotter, and we couldn't have survived in that atmosphere.
Well, we could have survived in that atmosphere. The human race, I'm not a gloom and doom person.
Mm-hmm.
We could have survived in the much warmer, hotter, moister atmosphere that there was. We would not have been as comfortable as we are today, and it was a completely different Earth than we see today. But we could have survived, and what I'm saying is that the Earth that we are seeing today does not have anywhere near the amount of carbon dioxide that historically, if you go back millions of years, that the Earth...
Yeah, but we're not going back millions of years, Henry. We're living here right now. You're suggesting that the 3,000 scientists who signed, or 2,300 scientists who signed the IPCC document from the UN saying that global warming and greenhouse gases are connected are wrong, and you're right?
Yes, I am. I'll put it to you very bluntly.
And you're basing this on weather cycles?
No, I'm basing this on a couple of principles. I'm basing it on, one, first off, correlation is not causation. These scientists are
not always, but sometimes.
Sometimes
correlation will indicate causation.
Sometimes it does.
I see somebody, injured and their car is crumpled around them. I think I can reasonably infer they just had an accident.
Well, I based my opinion upon a couple of scientists in Denmark who have traced this cycle back to about 1500. The people's mm-hmm. names are Sindvark and Christensen. They're two Danish scientists who did a very exacting study on this, and they put their correlation at an 85% probability, which is much, much higher than the 3,000 scientists who said that it's greenhouse gases that are causing this. And the fact is that the source of all energy to the Earth is the sun. The sun gives radiation. That radiation translates to heat, and heat translates to an excited climate. Excited climate means a climate that is full of activity, such as the recent tornadoes that we saw in the Midwest of the United States, such as the current flooding that we are seeing.
The warmer the atmosphere gets, the more energy it holds, the more moisture it can hold, which is itself a greenhouse gas, and the more violent your weather is going to be. I mean, this is well documented.
And what a lot of people have missed in this concept of greenhouse gases is the fact that water vapor is the most powerful greenhouse gas that we have.
But water vapor is not something that you produce, and you can produce water vapor all day long, and it's not going to change atmospheric levels of water vapor, because the ability of the atmosphere to hold water vapor is a function of its temperature. It's not the amount that's being produced. I mean, if the atmosphere can hold more water, it'll take it. It'll take it from the oceans.
Precisely, and the more water vapor it holds, the more heat the atmosphere will hold.
That's right. So you get into this vicious cycle.
What you do not look at is carbon dioxide and methane, but you look at the water vapor. And the water vapor is a function of how much heat you're getting from the sun.
So you're saying we should just ignore carbon dioxide and methane?
No, you don't ignore them. They are important greenhouse gases. But what I am saying is that...
So they do have an effect.
Is what I'm saying is currently, based upon historical evidence, we have much lower carbon dioxide and methane in the atmosphere than we have had...
Than during the Cretaceous period.
Even if you go back 10,000 years, it's much, much less. And there is also very good historical evidence to suggest that... global
Henry, I got to tell you, this sounds like crackpot science to me.
It's not. I have very carefully documented this.
Okay, Henry, hang on just a second. Storm in Carbondale would like to add to the conversation. Storm, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom. Hi, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah. How are you?
Hi. Well, the evidence that I see indicates to me that weather is very cyclical over huge periods of time. The evidence I see, the most northernmost settlement on Earth is in Norway, and there's a little town up in the Arctic Circle in Norway where they're mining coal today.
Right.
And, of course, we all know what coal is formed from.
Storm, if you look at that, that goes back to the period of time before Panama erupted and shut down the flow of warm water from the Pacific between the northern and southern American continents. This was the beginning of the Ice Age, 3.1 million years ago, when Panama closed off as a result of tectonic activity, shut down that flow of current, and then the Great Conveyor Belt began in the Atlantic, which has been cycling on and off ever since.
Well,
throwing us into ice ages and bringing us out of ice ages. We're still in an ice age right now. We're just in this 10,000-year warm spot in it.
Well, Tom, there's also been a huge seam of coal discovered in Antarctica.
Sure, you'll find it all over the place.
Well, doesn't that indicate that there was tropics? There were tropics in those in the Arctic and the Antarctic million years ago or better?
Yeah.
Well, doesn't that indicate that weather's cyclical?
Well, yes and no. Yes, I agree. The weather is cyclical and temperature is cyclical, and there's enormous evidence for this. I mean, the Greenland ice core drilling that was done just a couple of years ago, dramatic evidence of the cyclical nature of weather. I don't disagree with Henry on that. But I think that to discard the billions of tons of carbon dioxide that we're throwing into the atmosphere every year and say, well, that's of no consequence. This is just, you know, cycles. I think that that's irresponsible.
Well, I see your point, Tom, but do you think we should sign on to the Kyoto Treaty?
You know, I'm not well educated enough about the Kyoto Treaty to speak to that, but I think that anything that we can do that would reduce carbon dioxide down to some sort of baseline levels, at the very least, following the principle that you do the least harm possible, would just make sense. We don't know the result of all of this carbon dioxide. Let's say that Henry, let's say that you're right, and that there's only a 15% chance that carbon dioxide is influencing this. If I took you to a restaurant and I said, Henry, there's a 15% chance this meal is going to kill you, would you eat it?
Well, I don't think so, but I think what people are confusing here is the difference between greenhouse gases and pollutants. I'm not saying that all this carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is not harmful. If you go into any large major city anywhere in the world, you will see a lot of pollutants in the air that are caused by carbon dioxide.
It's nitrogen. Mostly particulate stuff.
Particulate stuff. And this is being more and more demonstrated as being extremely harmful and carcinogenous to human beings, causing cancer. I'm all for cleaning up the atmosphere. What I'm saying is, before we go overboard and say that, you know, carbon dioxide is the cause for greenhouse gases, I'm saying be careful before you yell wolf here. There is very strong evidence that it is not the cause for climate change. I'm not saying it's not the cause for a lot of health problems.
Right. Okay. Well, Henry, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Storm, thanks for your call. I appreciate your calling. And Henry Willis, the author of Earth's Future Climate. And thank you for your comments, for your philosophy, your point of view, and...
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Maybe. Maybe. What do we know about climate change? There is a whole industry in the United States devoted to promoting the idea that we really don't know what's going on with the climate. And I would suggest to you that much of that industry has its own agenda. I don't think that there are any folks out there who, of the many scientists, legitimate, credible climate scientists, who are looking at these kinds of issues and saying, just purely on an academic level, people who do this for a living, who are trained in this field, who are saying, well, you know, maybe there's a danger here just for the heck of it, or for personal gain. There's no personal gain in it to them. They're just reporting the science. So, it's... Anyhow, thank you, Henry. A $350 billion tax rebate. I got an email today from... Well, I won't name the person, but I got an email called Tax Cut, and it's a little cartoon. And there's a guy sitting in his chair with a pipe in his mouth, and it's a little piece of clip art. It's nicely done. He says, a $350 billion tax rebate. And then he says, the average taxpayer will receive about $400, which is the statistics that the Bush administration has been putting out. If there are 260 million average taxpayers, which there are, at $400 each, if you do the math on that, it adds up to about $104 billion. But it's a $350 billion tax rebate. So in the last panel, you see this little thought balloon over his head, and he says, I wonder who gets the other $246 billion. Philip in Florida, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. We've got about a minute left, but if you want to hang on over the break, we can take this if it runs long. Yeah, I am. Philip, welcome.
I had a call because it was very ironic. The gentleman who just spoke was from Carbondale, Illinois.
Uh-huh. Oh, you're pointing out the irony of it.
And I went to university in Carbondale, Illinois, at Southern Illinois University.
Right.
When I went in the late 60s, Carbondale had a very moderate climate.
Mm-hmm.
It was warm. It was really rather warm. We didn't have, maybe we had snow once or twice a year.
Philip,
really
that music means
climate.
We're running up
That's
against
changed.
The edge of the edge of this break. Philip, if you can hold on for just a minute, actually it'll be about 3 minutes here. We'll be back right after this break. Stick around. We'll return soon.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video, call Power, Performance, and Possibilities. Call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
When I was 12, my father was killed in an industrial accident at a
vacant lot
where he worked. My mother insisted I stay in
the highway on-ramp
to get an education. So she took a job waiting tables at a
parking garage
to support us. She worked double shifts. And on her break, she would pick me up from
the highway on-ramp
and drop me off at the big
office building.
And I'd spend hours and hours just reading books. I remember every Saturday we'd have breakfast at the
parking garage.
And I'd tell her what I had read. And her eyes would just light up. Because she knew I'd end up in college, not working at the
vacant lot
like my dad.
When we lose a historic place, we lose a part of who we are. To learn how you can help protect places in your community, visit nationaltrust.org. History is in our hands. A message brought to you by the National Trust for Historic Preservation and the Ad Council.
You hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, as
you
I was know. Expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring Fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We've got just a few minutes left here in the hour. Philip in Florida, my apologies for the tyranny of the clock there. It runs up against all of us and bumps us off from time to time. But finish your thought there. I wasn't quite sure where you were going with it.
Yeah, I heard this man say he was from Carbondale, and I went to university there and had a very moderate climate. It was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to places like Chicago, Detroit, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
That's changed. The weather there has changed. It's cold and it's uncomfortable. It's not a good climate anymore. And it comes from the very town that guy is living in.
Well, wasn't our guest who was from Carbondale. That was Storm, who was a caller from Carbondale. Our guest, I'm not sure where he was from.
Yeah, Carbondale is in southern Illinois, not far from Paducah, Kentucky, and about an hour and a half from St. Louis.
Yeah, we're on WINI there.
Oh, you are?
I believe is the call letters.
Yeah, it's a very large university down there.
The
weather
it's
used to be terrific, and it sure isn't anymore, not during the winter.
Well, hopefully it'll improve. We'll find out. Philip, thank you for your call and thank you for your comments. We've been talking about a wide variety of stuff here. Is democracy served by our educational system? I got an email here from Dave, one of the folks who participates regularly in our chat room. In fact, I think he's in there right now. About a dozen folks in there, almost. If you go to TomHartman.com and then click on the radio show link and click on the chat room link, and that drops you into the International Trade Forum and CompuServe, you click on the chat button, and boom, you're in. And we do this every day for the noon to 2 Eastern time, whatever that may be in your particular time zone. Anyhow, he says, a large multinational company I worked for had a budget crisis every year around August. They would lay off most of the contract workers to cut costs. He says, it's interesting that they would lay off people, but continue to pay the leases on the now idle computers and the equipment those people used. The equipment was more important than the workers. It's truly an outrage against America's workers. Anyway, he says, it's interesting that we understand the issue from two slightly different points of view. And he says, I've been enjoying the chat room. Thank you very much, Dave. I appreciate that. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening today. See you tomorrow.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program.